You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where it's a trap! On a recent episode of Last Man Standing, in Mike Baxter, the main character's vlog at the end that he uses to advertise for the store he works for, Outdoor Man, and also makes political points, he used examples of three famous figures to talk about getting up after you've knocked back down, or believing in yourself after you've been knocked down, or believing in yourself when nobody else does. The three figures he used were Richard Nixon, Peyton Manning, and Ayn Rand. We'll ignore the fact that he shouldn't have picked Manning and he should have picked Tom Brady. I don't remember the reason for Nixon, but for Ayn Rand, he talked about how a large number of publishers rejected The Fountainhead, and then when it was published, it went on to sell millions of copies. But the important thing about this story is not that someone mentioned Ayn Rand on television, although that is certainly a positive, especially as this show tends to be more right-wing. No, the important thing is here, after the vlog was viewed, they showed the character Mike talking to his boss, and the boss said, "Ayn Rand, Mikey? Really?" Atlas shrugged, and so did all our customers. This is a perfect example of writers feeling they need to apologize for the material they're using. They used Ayn Rand positively because there's reason to mention her positively. However, in order to not lose their audience, they apologized. They wrote in this line to make it seem like they didn't really support Rand. In the same sense, one of the major plots of the episode was about the younger generation apologizing for not supporting feminism. The youngest daughter on the show is very, very right-wing, and in the episode, she was basically saying to her mother that, you know, "I'm not a feminist. I don't need to be a feminist because of everything you did anymore. Everything you did in the past. Everything your generation did in the past. Everything feminists did in the past." But ultimately, the point of the episode was, and they both agreed on this, the mother and the daughter, if you're not advancing, you're retreating. If you apologize for who you are and what you believe, you are tacitly, implicitly accepting guilt. And ultimately, when you accept guilt, that means that you're acknowledging that there's something wrong with you. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, I currently have the game tracker up on my phone right now for the Monday Night Football game because I could actually win about $20 on DraftKings this week.
My God.
I know. It'll put me to almost what I put in.
And then next week you'll lose it all because that's how the luck gods work with you.
Probably.
Just enough to tease you, but not to actually let you explode.
Definitely. In undergrad, we called that Justin luck, where I would hit a really amazing, like, double bank shot in pool, and then on the next one, scratch.
Welcome to Justin's life, everyone.
Yep, it's all watching Last Man Standing and playing DraftKings in pool.
That and pussy, but the wrong kind.
I don't know if having cats is the wrong kind.
Wrong kind!
That seems rather kiddiophobic or something.
You don't remember what Fiza said to you? Maybe she didn't say it to you, but maybe she said it to me. She said, "A man should only have one kind of pussy in his life, and you chose poorly."
Oh, she might have said that to me, but that's one of those things that she says that I sort of just disregard.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's amusing, but I don't necessarily agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Happy unbirthday, Elliot.
Thank you. A very merry unbirthday to you too.
Yeah, but I did mine facetiously. Because if we record on my birthday, I will record.
Mm-hmm. No, it was for my birthday. We did the over 30 thing. Met up at a Starbucks, a group of friends, and then we went to the new bar over in Disney Springs here in Orlando. And it's the Jock Lindsey's Hangar Bar, which if you're an Indiana Jones fan, you'll recognize it. And I did the over 30 thing, which is I had one drink and basically focused more on the food. So, yeah, that's my wild and crazy nights nowadays. But it was fun. Good times, good people. It was a lot of fun.
Why is that the over 30 thing?
The more I hang out with, like, I noticed the disparity between people who are, like, in their 20s and people, once you hit, like, 30, I think you start to appreciate the food aspect of a celebration more than the drinking. So I think that's how I distinguish between, like, somebody who's, like, turning 24 or 25, and they're just downing, like, shots after shots. And for me, I'm like, ooh, sticky, you know, pot wing, you know, pot stickers or whatever they're called, tasty and delicious. I think I'll have that in my one drink.
I don't know. I guess I'm having trouble with this because I've never drank and I don't like eat a lot just because it's a certain celebration. Even Thanksgiving these days, which is coming up here, I don't like gorge on food. Daniel, have you had the same experience Elliot had?
I would not in specific, but in principle, I understand what he means, which is you get older and you focus more on the experience of a given thing instead of the ritualistic action of a given thing. Now, I was never a huge drinker either, but I notice young people, oh, I'm 24, I'm gonna have like 24 shots. And when they're 34, they're like, God, do you have a bottle of 1934 Cabernet?
All right. I mean, I agree with that principle. That wasn't the principle I was thinking, but then again, I don't understand what young people do a lot often, such as what we're going to cover here in a second, because apparently young people are racist and I don't realize it. So let's talk about that story in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. Because, kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
Band members aren't only nerdy, they're apparently racist, at least in Texas. Students at the Atascocita High School are in trouble over a gift they gave to their rival school before the varsity football game. Usually, these bands exchange gifts to encourage good sportsmanship within a humble independent school district. But instead, a gift that was given to Summer Creek High School was deemed wildly and offensively racist.
Is that really gift, the name of the district? Humble?
Yes. Humble ISD. Mm-hmm.
Is that an acronym? Please tell me it's an acronym.
It is not an acronym. So the gift, as you might expect, was some racist depiction and a noose and something that said, F off all you N-words. No, just kidding. It was a fruit basket.
Elliot, yeah. Does that offend you?
A fruit basket? Actually, no gay man will ever be offended by a fruit basket. We might be offended by how decorated it is or isn't, but never by the actual giving of a fruit basket.
Offended only if it's not a Harry David's fruit basket.
But that's what makes this even funnier, right? Because there's no way I can think of this being racist unless it was full of only watermelon. And you would think a fruit basket would maybe offend gay people because it's fruit. But if it doesn't even offend gay people, what is there to get offended about here?
So, yeah. The fruit basket contained candy, gum, a decorated bucket for Halloween with a small watermelon, coconut, pineapple, and watermelon gum. There it is, folks. Behold the racism.
It's got to be the watermelon, right?
It's got to be the watermelon because it's not like they burned a cross in the field in front of this other team. The funny thing about the articles that concern this is they say the thing is racist, but they never say why it's racist. Because I think in identifying why they consider this thing racist, they would in fact be racist themselves.
The articles would be racist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it would imply something about a given race, what they should and should not find offensive. So first of all, the students have no idea what the fuck any of this is about. The flautist, Carolina, good flautist name, said, we didn't do anything wrong. We wouldn't do that because we know better than that. Our parents raised us better. Senior Alyssa Taylor said, I'm mixed race. I don't take offense to that. How does anyone else take offense?
Well, that's because she doesn't have enough of the right race to be offended.
She's got
too much of that white in her that makes her not offended by things.
Yes, I hear if you have one drop of white in you, it makes you white.
Yeah, it gives you too much privilege if you have any white in you.
Unless you're running for president. Humble ISD released a statement. It said, quote, is a tradition for student representatives of competing schools to exchange gifts on the field at varsity football games. On Friday, students from one school presented students from the other school with a watermelon, a pineapple, a coconut, and watermelon gum. Today, school administration conducted an investigation after considering the totality of the circumstances, determined that the gift was inappropriate and lacked good sportsmanship. At a Societa, whatever your high school name is, some racist version of your high school name, will not tolerate racial insensitivity. So I decided to look up what the hell could be racially insensitive about this, and this is what I came up with. Okay. I actually looked up statistics. Are you ready for this? So, Atascocita High School in Humble ISD is 20% African American.
By the way, it doesn't sound Hispanic. Like it doesn't. When you say Humble ISD, it doesn't sound like that's the district. It sounds like you're calling them humble. In my humble opinion, in Humble ISD, it's ridiculous. That's what's offensive here. Rename your school district.
In Humble IMO.
Pretty much, exactly.
Yes. I can't even say the name of this high school. Get a more pronounceable name. Atascocita High School.
It does sound like something you'd find in your lung, you know what I mean? It really does.
Indeed. The gift-giving racist school has a makeup of 20% African-American, 30% Hispanic. So that would be, if you total those, 50% African-American-Hispanic, 44% white, and then a tiny percentage, 2.6% Asian, but no one cares about them. So the school that they gave the gift to, which has the much easier to pronounce name, Summer Creek High School, thank you, is in fact 40% African-American, 39% Hispanic, and only 15% white. So
were there tools hidden inside the fruit to help the white people escape? Is that what was racist?
I don't even know what that means necessarily.
I didn't watch enough DuckTales where Ma Beagley baked tools into the cake to help the Beagle Boys escape.
But weren't the Beagle Boys supposed to be black?
That's the point. I reversed it. It's reverse racism. Oh.
I see. No, I didn't get that whatsoever. I don't know what was racist about this. I honestly...
Can you know, we talk about the fact that Summer Creek sounds like, I don't know, one of those products that women use when they get that not-so-fresh feeling down there?
Sounds like a douche ad.
Yeah.
Summer Creek High School. Keeps you fresh.
I feel so clean and so fresh thanks to Summer Creek.
Mm-hmm. It's true. They do sound pretty douchey.
I thought it was the name of the spinoff of Dawson's Creek about his sister.
No. When at Christmas, if a coworker were to give me a basket
of douches.
No. I wouldn't be offended by that. I'd be wildly confused.
What would you do with it? You couldn't give it to five. Just be like, hi, sweetie, my coworker gave this to me. Do you need them?
Look what I got at work. No, if my coworker gave me a basket of, I don't know, Ritz and, sopapillas, do you think I would go, oh, fuck you, you racist fuck? No, I'd go, thank you. I love me some Ritz crackers and sopapillas.
I don't even know. I would be like, fuck you. I don't know what sopapillas are. Stop talking down to me with your basket.
You don't know what sopapillas are? You live in Southern California and you don't know what sopapillas are?
I mean, it sounds like a venereal disease. It sounds like what you would use Summer Creek to treat.
Soap a pee into this cup. It is basically just a tortilla that they extra deep fry and cover in honey and cinnamon and whipped cream and chocolate.
Oh, this is because you're half and half.
Yes! Thank you. Well done. It's because I'm a mixed race member of this show.
But what if they gave you creamers, but they only gave you half and half creamers? How would you feel about that?
I would say, I'm sorry, I exclusively drink heavy whipping cream now.
And what if they were black and you said that you only use heavy whipping cream?
And I guess they would be offended because this is the movie Django?
Or Roots. Well, here's the thing, right? Isn't it racist if we start saying you can't give certain gifts to people because of their race? Like, if I can't, like, take a Mexican friend out to, like, get Del Taco because that's racist, isn't that racist to say that?
What if you're a black guy, not that I've met one, but what if you're a black guy who genuinely fucking loves watermelon?
Are you not allowed?
Who loves watermelon is my point.
Don't lots of people love watermelon? I'm sure some of the people I've met in my life love watermelon, and I'm sure a subsection of that is a minority. So I've probably met a minority who loves watermelon.
But I mean, are you oppressing black people who actually like fruit? Like, aren't you contributing to the childhood obesity of the African American population if you are telling them that no one may give them watermelon under any circumstances?
Can you not sell them watermelon? Or do you have to sell it to them at a discounted price? Or do you have to charge more? This is all so confusing to me. What are the rules?
I don't know. Ask Jeremy Renner later. Foreshadowing.
Oh, God. All I'm saying is this. If you give me, as a Puerto Rican person, if you give me a basket with rice and beans and all that and herbs and spices, I would look at you and say, thank you. I don't need to go to Aldi to do my shopping now. I have everything I need. I would not be offended in the slightest. I would seriously say, thank you.
But if they gave you a basket of not being able to vote or pay taxes, that might be offensive. Fucking Puerto Rico. Hate you.
If I don't have to pay taxes, then that would
be. You're protected by the government, but you don't have to pay taxes. That's why we should hate you. Anyway. What these kids should have done is realize their mistake and then burst out into tears, realizing the evil oppressors they are, much like Huffington Post columnist Jasmine Burton. In fact, writing in the Huffington Post recently, Jasmine said that she broke down in tears after realizing that she is not as oppressed as other people in the United States. Ms. Burton's article is titled, Finding My Place in the Fight for Social Justice and Health Equity. And it recounts her struggles to, quote, find her place in the fight for social justice. Thank you, terrible journalism. one of Ms. Burton's seminal moments
But you repeat yourself.
Piece, yes. Came during her first privilege walk. Yes, that's a thing. She writes
Isn't
that
just when you're white and you learn how to, you take your first step?
Yeah. Look at that. Oh, he took his first privilege walk. Oh, get it on camera. Yeah. She writes that the instructor lined everyone up at the end of the hallway and told us to stand side by side. Then the instructor told them that you take a step back every time they name one of the things. So the instructor said, if, for instance, take a step back if you had books in your house, if you had a parent who tell you that you love you every day, among other sort of nice general things. And Ms. Burton found she was far out ahead of the majority of the group, almost in complete isolation, meaning she was drastically more privileged than her compatriots.
See, this is another thing that confuses me about this whole race thing, right? I don't understand, like, when things are considered racist anymore. Do we have this thing where we don't give certain races books? Like, if you go into Barnes & Noble and you're black and you try to buy a book, they're like, nah, nope, not allowed.
We will give you some watermelon. Yeah.
You can buy the hip-hop records, but you can't, no books at Barnes & Noble. Like, what?
Also, does just having books in your proximity make you privileged? Like, I know people who had a fuck ton of books in their home and never read a goddamn one of them.
What about a homeless guy who sleeps in the library? Is he privileged?
He is so privileged. He's got so many books in his home. So let's continue with her quote here. Quote, that was the moment that I physically realized, because she was standing apart, that because of my background and because of my incredible communities of support, I was well positioned in life, and it wasn't fair. I completely broke. it wasn't fair that she had loving parents. It wasn't fair that she had an education.
What ingratitude?
Think about that.
That's really what it is. It's just complete ingratitude more than anything else. It's just this insanity. Oh, my parents loved me. Yes, they did. And that's something that you should appreciate and be grateful for, that you have books in your house. I mean, come on, people. I wanted to slap this woman so hard.
I don't know if her parents actually loved her, though. To feel this deep level of guilt, there has to be something wrong. You had to have gone through some sort of trauma in order to feel this deep level of guilt for just being alive, basically. So I don't even know if it's true that her parents loved her.
No, I'm sure that they did, because I think that it's the kind of thing where you immerse yourself in this particular culture, and when you immerse yourself in a particular work culture or just a culture of peers with a certain mindset, and you imbibe all of these different ideologies and philosophies, it can really do a number on you. I just want to know the conversation she had with her mother when she called her. Because she says that she called her mom, and I can only imagine that her mother literally, you know, just gave her what for on the phone.
Do you think immersion in this culture is enough to have this sort of mentality?
Well,
I think that if your parents don't instill individuality in you, or that they don't instill a proper philosophical basis with which you will regard other ideas, or you could regard other ideas, and yeah, that leaves you vulnerable to what other people bring to you in whatever culture you find yourself in. That I don't think that that's necessarily a reflection on the parents' love for her, but it could very well be that maybe they just didn't provide her a philosophical basis.
I absolutely think that when these kids go to college and they get wrapped up in this, they become part of this horrifying, self-echoing, intellectual masturbatory community, they can completely project onto their childhood anything they want. I mean, a quintessential example here is Hitler Youth, who, even if they were raised by fantastic parents, were brainwashed into believing that everything their parents did was a crime against the state, and literally turned them in for it, and in some cases had their parents killed because of it. We're obviously not at that point, but it's the same kind of thing. By the way, for anyone picturing Ms. Jasmine Burton, she is a biracial African-American and Native American female who grew up in a predominantly white and largely affluent suburban community. So we're not talking about another white person feeling guilt here. She's just so sad that her oppression doesn't reach the level of other people's oppression.
Right, this goes to the white feminism thing, right?
Yes.
Now they're starting to eat each other.
Oh, God. How fucking awful tasting that must be.
What if everyone who steps back a certain amount just got their head cut off because they weren't oppressed enough to be alive anymore? or they're just excommunicated from the group?
Yes.
You can't
talk anymore.
The best
thing for them.
Go over there with the fruit basket. There's some watermelon for you.
God, if only they would be segregated from the group. That would be the best thing that could possibly happen to them.
Did you just say a black girl should be segregated?
Yes. Yes, I did. Yes, that's going to be taken out of context someday when I run for office.
Not only is she black, she's black and Native American, the two most segregated people in American history.
Yeah.
I can see World War II Japanese. Don't get mad at me, all right?
Ellie, did you have something to add?
I was going to ask if you guys had seen that article that I sent you about from Milo Yiannopoulos about how, dear feminists, gay men are breaking up with you. You know, like, they're just, I don't know, I thought it was funny, and he makes a lot of these points, just the absurdity of the social justice war, the absurdity of just eating, you know, eating our people's own in the attempt to race to the bottom of who's the most oppressed person. It was just funny, very timely in response
to this.
Well,
I mean, that's the story of the factory in Atlas Shrugged.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was, they would literally give to the, you know, to the people who were the most needy. So it just became, in order to make more money, you had to claim you were the most needy. So it became a race to the bottom to prove who was the neediest.
Yes, absolutely. And I hope that only our bizarre prediction of the fact that social justice warriors will break up into such small minority groups that will eventually end up back at the individual will come true. But
by accident. It will, by accident.
Yes, but what I just said there, absolutely not politically correct. And in fact, politically correct? No longer politically correct! Take that, Bill Maher. At least at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, yes, the great UWM, is starting a campaign called Just Words, which aims to raise awareness of microaggressions and their impact. And one of the words that they've decided is a microaggression is in fact the phrase politically correct. Yes. Merriam-Webster defines politically correct as conforming to a belief that language and practices which could offend political sensibilities, as in matters of sex or race, should be eliminated. The university, however, claims that calling something politically correct has become a way to deflect and say that people are being too sensitive and police language. Why would they say that? Politically correct, moreover, is just one of a whole host of words and phrases that the university has denounced as microaggressions, some of the others being, you might expect rape is a microaggression, whore or slut, Nazi is a microaggression, bitch, ghetto, that's gay, trash, illegal alien, and my favorite, retarded. Yes.
Dude, it's retarded what they've done with the phrase retarded, the word retarded.
Yes. You know who's a huge actual advocate of using the word retarded in context is Dr. Drew from the Love Line.
Does he use the same argument I use?
Well, he points out that it's an actual word and it has actual meaning. Yeah. Like, and not only for him in the medical field, but just as a word in the English language, it means something.
I mean, it gets people upset, even when you refer, if you use it properly in the context of a process. If you talk about retarding a process, people get upset about that. Why do you have to use that word? I'm like, because. I had somebody get angry with me because in music, when you talk about a retard or a retardando, you know, people get angry with you because like, why are you using that word? I'm like, because it's an actual musical term.
He's a retardando.
Yeah, there is. It's an actual thing.
Sounds like something from The League.
It does. Yeah.
Now, what's your argument, Justin?
Well, my argument is the argument that apparently Michael Scott used in an episode of The Office, so everyone who refutes me is like, well, Michael Scott said it, and he is a character we're not supposed to take seriously. But it's the whole idea of it's not good to be retarded. That's the entire point. That's why it's an insult to call someone who's not retarded, retarded. You don't call retarded people retarded. You don't go up to a kid with Down syndrome and go, you're retarded. Like, that would be retarded to call him retarded.
At least redundant. The university also claims the word lame is a microaggression, that it somehow both ridicules and ignores the lives of amputees and therefore shouldn't be used.
There's a great irony in this story. So the reason politically correct is no longer politically correct is because it's a microaggression because it polices language, correct?
Because they're claiming that people police language, yes.
Right.
And that is a microaggression.
But that's a policing of language to tell them it's no longer politically correct.
It's a catch-22!
It is a catch-22. Yes. It's a paradox. Time travel. Something.
Yes, but I guess catch 22 is a microaggression against people who only catch 21. So, there are many things about this story that are bizarre.
Your reference to a book that only a certain amount of people have read is a microaggression to anyone listening to this podcast who have not read catch 22.
They don't know. That's you're true. Sorry. Is that what you're saying?
It's certainly a microaggression against fucking Yasmin and her friends who didn't have books in their home. So one of the bizarre elements of this story is that this campaign was put out by the university's Inclusive Excellence Center. The director of the university's Inclusive Excellence Center is a guy named Warren Scherer.
By the way, definitionally, isn't excellence exclusive? Isn't that why they have the same?
You caught that. Isn't you catch that?
Isn't that why they have the same prefix?
Oh,
excellence,
damn.
Exclusive. This is the way language works, people.
Well, not for these people. Especially for Mr. Warren Scherer, who tweeted to Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. So Mike Huckabee, if you didn't know, tweeted, I trust Bernie Sanders with my tax dollars like I trust a North Korean chef with my Labrador. Zing!
That's a good one.
Fucking zing. And Warren Shearer, the president of the Inclusive Excellence Center, or director, I should say, tweeted at Huckabee, "Fuck every fiber of your being." Huckabee, and this is a fake quote from Huckabee, "We give Iran money. I'm pandering to Republican Jews. This agreement is tissue. Ew.
Because of all the Republican Jews, because Jews are known for being Republican.
Yes, completely. And then,
but by the way, I want to point something out here. So if we're going to use their principle, and we're going to use in instead of X, right? Because we want to be inclusive, not exclusive. Doesn't that mean it's the Inclusive Insolence Center?
Yes.
I think that says all we need to know.
It does. Drop the mic. No, don't. It's expensive. Don't. And then finally, he said of the GOP debate, I guess this is Rand Paul, "Why do you hate Jews?" And a fake answer from Rand Paul, "I no longer because of rich Jews." So,
there
you have it.
Did the Jews secretly switch sides? Is this because the right wing supports Israel? Is that what's going on here?
It is because the right wing supports Israel, despite the fact that Jews still hate Republicans, but apparently Democrats still hate Jews. I don't get it. The Jews don't fit in anywhere. Why do they put up with this shit?
Because they make money off of it.
I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so politically correct is politically incorrect. I don't know. You talk about these rules. Who decides this? Who sits around a table and says, well, what's no longer allowable to say? Well, I guess we can't say politically correct anymore. Is it then a vote? All in favor, raise your hand or foot or extended non-limb entity, because you don't want to discriminate against the lame. I mean disabled. I mean otherly abled. Who decides this? Is it like a Twitter committee? Is there a hashtag?
It's usually a hashtag, right?
It's like Hydra.
It kind of is like fucking Hydra.
It is like Hydra.
Secret which... group. It's like a secret group that just decides these things and disseminates it to their operatives in the culture.
You know, the Hydra comment was the perfect transition, and then you had to keep going.
So it's like Hydra.
Yeah. So let's talk about that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Earlier, I made mention of the fact that Monday Night Football is airing while we record. Well, the other thing that's airing while we record is Supergirl. So you're going to have to wait a week to hear our review on that. We'll watch it over the next week, the pilot, and we will tell you guys what we think about it. Odds are Elliot will like it, Daniel will not, and I will be somewhere in the center. That's my prediction.
My preview on the train today was the review of it titled Up, Up, and Away, Supergirl Soars on the Power of Feminism and Millennial Buzz.
Feminism? Really?
That's what it said. Can't wait.
Yeah, that makes me not want to see it.
No, I want to see it. It's Berlanti. Berlanti, you can't go by what other people try to say about it.
All right, let's talk about a show that Daniel does love. Dan, you've been binge-watching Difficult People on Hulu and raving about it to me.
Okay, I'm not sure rave is the word. I do quite like it. Many ways.
Elliot doesn't love procedurals either, but you know I go over the top.
It's true. Yes.
I go over the top, like I'm Sly Stallone.
Yes. This is the part of the show where I demonstrate my ignorance about actors. Ready? Difficult People is a Hulu original show that stars the gay guy from Parks and Rec and that one sort of chubby redhead who's done some things but isn't really known for anything. If you have their names, please jump in, but I don't have them. They basically play New Yorkers who are, well, not just difficult people, but horrible people who nonetheless think that they are the greatest people on the planet. But before you say, what the fuck, why would I watch this nonsense? It is 100% a show that you are supposed to laugh at the characters, not with them. You are not in on the joke. You are an observer of the joke that is their life. Still may not be your thing, but I think you should at least check it out because of the writing. I think the writing is very clever. Not the plotting and structure of the show necessarily, which there's very little of, but just the jokes and the wittiness of the writing and the ability for them to basically turn a pop culture reference into something hysterical. I think it's only 8 episodes. They're like 20-something minutes apiece. I think if you like witty comedies, especially with pop culture references, you'll at least appreciate the show, if not like it.
So you say that, but I watched the first 20 minutes of it, and that was about all I could handle because I loathed them so much that I didn't find it funny. I was just like, you should not be on my screen at all. People like you should not exist.
But it's, for me, it's cathartic. It's the same thing we sort of do here every week, right? We're laughing at the farce. You can't take it seriously. I mean, I think that it's funny because there are people like that in the world, and I want to laugh at them.
Well, right, that's the point. So I have to deal with that when I walk outside. I don't come inside and turn on my television and boot up Hulu to see them again. I don't look away from them to look at my phone and see them again.
But it's not naturalistic in a documentary sense. It's not showing real people. It is taking this and turning it up to 11 and then giving you the basically open arms to embrace the horribleness in terms of laughing at it. I think it is a good thing on an even more philosophical level where they're taking some of this New York yuppie artistic I'm better than you philosophy and actually saying it's a bad thing instead of taking it as enlightened and sophisticated. I find that particularly amusing because the woman in the show is married to a guy who works at NPR. And they have a deep, deep feud with the people who work at PBS later in the series. And I think that's fucking hysterical because they're all a bunch of pretentious douches.
The most comparable thing this is to me is Seinfeld. That was the vibe I got from the show.
Maybe in terms of plotting, yes.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of people going off on tangents about nothing.
Is that all you got from this? You need
yes.
to watch more of it.
That's all I got from it. The only funny character was the mother.
The mother who is obsessed with herself, and she's a therapist. Yes.
Yeah, and that's why it was funny, because the woman kept trying to insult her mother, and then the mother just kept saying whatever she wanted to say.
Later in the show, she writes a musical called Me, A Story About You, starring me.
The mother?
Yes.
I mean, isn't the irony that the daughter is the same exact thing as the mother, and she doesn't realize it?
Yes! Indeed. That's part of the point. It's part of the humor.
Alright, well, speaking of people like this, feminists are angry a man won't help them negotiate their salaries.
I love that title.
It's a great title. It's from a smaller site, newsbusters.org. Do you know anything about this site, Daniel?
A smaller site? It's an enormous site.
Okay, it's an enormous site. I stand corrected. Tell us about this site.
It's been around for a long time. It's the people who started the bumper sticker, you know, the bumper sticker was famously something like fuck the left-wing media, something like that. Basically, they just look at all the reporting for networks and show you how horribly biased the reporting was. And now they've moved a little bit more onto these internet sites and things like Huffington Post and whatever, but they've been around forever.
Okay, well, this is an article about Jeremy Renner, and he was asked the question, would he be willing to negotiate alongside his female co-stars on future projects? I'm going to ignore the fact for a second that technically they're all negotiating alongside each other, even if they're not, you know, in the same room or even realizing that all of the negotiations are necessarily in context of each other because of they have one budget and they're going to spend it in the best way possible. I'm going to ignore that. So he responded to it, that's not my job. I don't know contracts and money and all that sort of stuff. He even said that I'm a performer and I know human behavior. When it comes to that sort of stuff, I let other people deal with it. I do what I'm good at. That's what I focus on. So he essentially said what Bill Belichick says, do your job, right?
Oh, I thought he said let the Jews handle it.
Well, yeah, but that's the Jew's job, and his job is to act. I don't see how anything you said just disagreed with me.
Moving on.
So here's another paragraph. Here's a paragraph from the article now. What's strange is that feminists are actually angry that Renner is not willing to be his female co-star's, quote, knight in shining armor, who has to, quote, save them in financial negotiations. Weren't feminists supposed to be proud stalwarts of independence who didn't need men to help them? And then it says the New York Magazine's feminist website, The Cut, tweeted out this snarky comment along with an accompanying article mocking Renner unceremoniously as the guy who's best known for calling Scarlett Johansson a slut. And the comment is, least useful Avenger says, it's not my job to help actresses get equal pay.
Is that what he said? Because I thought you read to us everything that he said, and nowhere in what he actually said was what they said he said.
But even if he had said that, he's not wrong.
Correct.
It's his job.
But
so
just
if he had said it, he would still be right.
Even if he had said it, absolutely. But just basic reading comprehension allows us to know that that's not at all what the fuck he said.
Well, they also said, one of the writers for the site said, for The Cut, said, Renner said it's not my job to help with all the little annoyances of Hollywood, such as women's equality. He's an actor, not an activist.
That's not at all what he fucking said.
Well, this is an example of what a person says about you says more about them than what it says about you. This woman took it to mean that he saw these things as little annoyances. That he saw himself, you know, not as an activist, as an actor, because she's saying everyone should be an activist type deal. It's revealing of her own psychology. He's basically saying that he's going to do what he's an expert at and leave the other experts to do what they're experts at. You know, that is a rational and respectful thing. But they're doing the same thing here they did with Jennifer Lawrence's words. They're filtering it through their own screen and not seeing what it's actually being said.
Yeah, Krolla, again, brought up a fascinating point about this, which is he said, are any of these celebrities actually doing their negotiating? If so, why? That's a horrible idea. You should have a professional doing your negotiating for you. You should have basically a Jew doing the negotiating. You should not be doing this yourself. One, you're not good at it. Two, you have other things to do.
Well, they don't
be a
really
good actor or actress.
They don't really want him to negotiate. They want him to tell his agent, or they want him to make a public stand where he says, I will not make more than Scarlett Johansson. I will not make more than Jennifer Lawrence. So they want him to basically give up money for the cause.
Yeah, basically, whether he's worth more or not. The idea that, oh, Robert Downey Jr. makes so much more money than Jennifer Lawrence. I'm like, he's been at this longer. He's been acting for a long time. He has cemented himself. He's an icon in Hollywood. Jennifer Lawrence, I'm sorry, but she's still relatively new.
It's got nothing to do with that. Let's compare Iron Man to the two characters Jennifer Lawrence is known for, Mystique and Katniss. Which character is more popular and more iconic?
Well, certainly, Iron Man is literally a bigger box office draw. That is the thing.
And merchandise.
And merchandise. And Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man is even like the best intersection of things that could have happened for a box office, basically. Mega star, mega icon, meet, converge, $1 billion movie. Like, no wonder he gets paid so much money. But, I mean, the simple point that I was trying to make is, even in the Jennifer Lawrence story, is Jennifer Lawrence really negotiating her own salary? No. That's dumb. Don't think of it that way.
Get a Jew.
Get
an Italian, otherwise people wind up at the bottom of lakes.
That was actually, again,
if you don't fucking pay us what we want to be paid, that's where you fucking end up.
Again, that was actually a plotline in Difficult People, where the gay guy finally gets an agent, and the agent's last name is like Johnson, and he's from Australia, and the whole thing in the episode is like, is he going to be good? He's not Jewish. And he turns out to be terrible, so.
See, that would piss me off if he turned out to be terrible. Vindicating these fucking people. Just hearing that pisses me off.
Oh my god, Justin, it's a comedy. You're supposed to laugh at the situation, not find enlightenment in it.
It's not funny.
It's hilarious.
It's not funny.
And you have no
it's
sense
tragic.
Of humor. You're a curmudgeon.
It's tragic.
You're a curmudgeon. A curmudgeonly curmudgeon.
I think we're all curmudgeons on this show.
Go back and eat your Werther's Original and watch Golden Girls, okay?
Yeah, I will sit in the audience and I will mock the performance the entire time.
Don't knock the Golden Girls. Those are my faves.
Well, you know who we can knock is someone who's doing exactly what they want Jeremy Renner to do. Daniel Craig has recently come out and apparently decided to shit on the franchise that made him lots of money.
Boo!
In earlier this month, apparently, he said he'd rather slash his wrists than do another James Bond film after Spectre.
Get on
good.
With it.
Maybe
no one will miss you.
Yeah, maybe I'll actually want to see Bond. Yes. He said in an interview with the Red Bulletin that let's not forget that he, Bond, actually a misogynist. A lot of women are drawn to him chiefly because he embodies a certain kind of danger and never sticks around for too long. Mm-hmm. He also talked about Monica Bellucci, who apparently people are calling an older woman, which he object to. He says, we're talking about Monica Bellucci, for heaven's sake. When someone like that wants to be a Bond girl, you just count yourself lucky. He didn't like the fact that she was called older because I guess they're around the same age. I don't know. Any corroboration on that, Elliot? Are they the same age?
Oh, I have no idea, but let's be honest. Okay, I mean, here's the thing. Unless you've read the original Ian Fleming novels, and I've managed to read a couple of them, but, I mean, these women were not going to James Bond with the hope of starting a marriage and children and the white picket fence. It's not misogyny. He's not using them. They know what they're getting into. They just want a nice ride with James Bond, and then that's it. And it's on both sides. This is actually a representation in Ian Fleming's novels of women who are sexually liberated because they know what they want from James Bond. And they're not having their hearts broken left and right.
Right, isn't it? If you're going to say that James Bond is misogynistic, isn't it anti-feminist to say that because it's essentially saying these women only get screwed by Bond and then left? Maybe that's what they want. Maybe they just want a one-night stand with a hunky guy with a gun.
Well, ultimately, isn't that revealing that Craig's comment is not only hatred of women, but hatred of men?
Yes, because he's a dumb bastard.
No, what I'm saying is he's saying women are drawn to him chiefly because he embodies a certain kind of danger and never sticks around for too long. So he's saying he's a misogynist who hates women. So he hates men because he thinks they're misogynists who hate women if they only, you know, they don't want a long-term relationship with them. They just want to have fun. They just want to connect on this level. But he's also hating women because he says women are attracted to a certain kind of danger, and they're attracted to men who don't stick around. Do you see what I'm saying? That gives him a he has a negative view of women?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
He's certainly not a thinker, that's for sure.
And by the way, my favorite part about this article is it says, Spectre is the fourth and possibly last time Craig will play the iconic character.
I hope it is.
Possibly?
I have not enjoyed.
Do you really think they're going to bring him back after this?
Who knows? If they write him a big enough check, he'll stick around.
Why wouldn't they want someone to be the face of the franchise who actually supports it and shows appreciation and love for it?
You're assuming these people have self-esteem. What they have are bank accounts, and they want to make a boatload of money.
And people will pay to see Daniel Craig as Bond. They will do it.
Right.
Personally, list that I'd like to place them with, but.
The last Bond movie was the only one I even found moderately enjoyable of the Daniel Craig Bonds. And I don't even say I liked it. It was moderately enjoyable. The rest of them, in my opinion, have been abysmal pieces of trash. Nihilistic, dark, sickening pieces of trash.
Is that the one that had Hannibal in it?
The last one?
Yeah.
Skyfall.
Yes.
Well, that
yes, it's the
that.
One where he was home alone, basically.
I heard that.
The best thing about Skyfall was Adele's song over the credits.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really worth watching.
The new song is stupid, so.
Well,
I'm going to watch Spectre not because of fucking Daniel Craig, but because of Christoph Waltz, by the way.
Yes!
So they keep getting good villains is what it sounds like.
Yes.
Mads, and now they're getting Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
Well, it's no surprise that Daniel Craig would sort of be going all sort of to the left here because that's what we're making all our heroes nowadays. we've talked a little bit about the change in Captain America that's happened, you know, saying how he's become an anti-bully leftist hero. Well, they've actually made this canon in the comic books. In the latest issue of Marvel's revamped Captain America, the iconic superhero takes on a group of right-wing conservatives trying to stop illegal immigrants from crossing the border. In Captain America, Sam Wilson number one, the superhero, also known as Sam Wilson, heads to the border to take on an evil militia group known as the Sons of the Serpent, who are patrolling the area between Mexico and Arizona, according to a video summary of the issue created by the McIver Institute. The Sons of Serpent try to stop a group of illegal immigrants from crossing the border. They accuse the immigrants of invading a sovereign land to spread disease and crime, take American jobs, and collect welfare. Staples of the conservative case against illegal immigration.
Funny. Captain America, how far are you fallen?
Is this, as I was claiming when I prefaced this article, further proof that this is what they're doing with Captain America?
This is the only thing they could possibly do with Captain America. And I don't just mean in this specific comic. I mean, overall, in any use of Captain America, you must apologize for the fact that America is in his name. If you're an artist. So, therefore, Captain America is going to become an agent of the left, necessarily. The end. So yes, that is what's going to happen in the movies as well. It may not be as strident as this in the movies. He may not come out and fight a right-wing militia group. But it's going to be there. He is going to be Captain Social Justice.
Is this going to carry over into the movies? Will we see a plot like this eventually in the movies?
I don't even know anymore. I don't know. The thing that gets me is, you know, conservatism, and I don't necessarily identify as conservative, but I have certain conservative leanings, but there is a wide gulf between, you know, a wide array of opinions on this issue of immigration. To lump all right-wing conservative people as being restrictionists or nativists or nationalists who don't want immigration, I mean, that's not fair. It's a completely, and I'm using that phrase correctly, it is not a fair and objective representation of people, of the right wing in the country. There are a lot of conservatives and libertarians and objectivists, people all over the place who have various opinions on the issue of immigration. The idea that they're all going to be shoehorned into this one category and that Captain America is just going to, you know, is going to take a stance against these guys. To me, it just frustrates the hell out of me because that doesn't represent me. I mean, I don't necessarily think of myself as an open borders type of guy, at least not right now, but I am damn in favor of open immigration. I don't believe in deporting people and breaking up families, things like that. So the idea that this is supposed to represent all people on the right wing spectrum, when there is a huge rainbow-like variety on opinions on this issue, it's completely disingenuous. And it really just cements the fact that the DC universe is the better universe, so screw you, Marvel.
Well, you would say rainbow.
Yeah.
But I think that calling this the right-wing conservative thing may have been the people doing the analysis. I don't think in the comic, not that I've read it, but I would think they don't say that these are right-wing Republicans in the comic.
They don't say it, but they do it by implication, not only in the group and the issue and in the rhetoric that's used, which is basically Donald Trump rhetoric, but also in the fact that the rednecks call him Captain Socialism in the comic book.
Which I find hilarious because aren't they basically responding to us? I mean, I've basically been one step away from calling him Captain Socialism on this podcast, haven't I been?
I'm pretty sure they're listening in. I mean, I mean, it's probably like a 50-50 chance they're listening in, but I'm really more toward the 50% that they are listening in at this point.
But what difference is there now between him and Hydra in terms of what their ultimate goals are? If he is going to be embracing a more socialist perspective, social justice perspective, then he has no moral ground over Hydra anymore. He just doesn't.
Nope, see, they want the same thing. They want control.
Right, but they don't see it that way is the problem. Even though they do want the same thing, they see it as, well, Captain America just wants to make people equal, whereas Hydra just wants to control everyone. They see the end as Hydra controlling. They see the end for Captain America as making people equal. And that's why they see the right wing as Hydra, because they think the right wing just wants to control people.
Yeah. Their control is fine as long as it makes people equal in the end.
People, just stop supporting, you know, stop watching Marvel and just go over to DC, tune into Arrow, The Flash. You'll have a much, much better ride. You'll enjoy those things better.
All right, well, speaking of things that you guys think that we'll enjoy better, the big entertainment news from this week was the Star Wars trailer dropped, and then immediately all the tickets sold out. All the tickets are belong to Star Wars nerds because they don't want them sleeping outside for months anymore.
Mine. Tickets are mine. All your tickets are belong to me.
All right. Give everyone your impressions of the trailer.
It was the best thing I have ever seen in my entire life.
False.
I rated a fantastic, great, and now I'm going to play it three times.
I'm not putting those sound effects in. I mean, we'll talk about the trailer a little bit in a second here, but do you really think objectively it's better than the Batman versus Superman trailer? Okay.
Look, no, it was not. Objectively, it was not.
Thank you.
But it was a very good trailer. It was very enticing while revealing little bits for Star Wars nerds while still being a little bit coy with the plot and leaving a few things open-ended. I just thought in general...
kind of left everything open-ended, which I'm not complaining about.
Man, left everything open-ended. There were hints in there about certain things. I think the whole conspiracy theory, for instance, about Luke ending up being the bad guy is bunk. By the last scene of the back of Kylo Ren's head being that huge bushy hair, that's clearly not Luke. So fuck off, all you idiots. I think it gave everyone enough to be super excited while still leaving a lot to the imagination and garnering interest. So it was a very good trailer.
And remember, it comes with a built-in fan base that Batman versus Superman doesn't necessarily have. You have a lot of Batman fans, you have a lot of Superman fans, but and like if anything with Zack Snyder, he's going to take it and make it his own. He's going to tell his own story, put his own mark on these heroes and with the story. So it really doesn't have the fan base the way that that Star Wars does. Star Wars fans have been waiting for this. So a lot of it is not just what the trailer objectively contains, but the emotional stuff that the audience has, that the viewers and the fans have when they watch this trailer, that's part of the experience. So even though it may not objectively be a better trailer, emotionally there's a lot more to it that inflates its value, or that it inflates our view of the trailer.
Are you using a leftist argument?
No. What? Come on, Justin.
Look, I wasn't comparing the two movies. I was simply poking holes in and making fun of Daniel's rhetoric. And yeah, certainly the experience is important for the people who are experiencing it. I would never tell them their experience isn't valid, and I would never tell them that, their experience is immoral or wrong or anything. I was just talking about the quality of the trailer comparatively. That's all I was saying. It doesn't make the trailer more valuable because of that. I mean, maybe to the individual, but that's an individual decision.
No, Justin. A proper rhetorical analysis would include a pathetic analysis, saying what emotions are you trying to get after and what emotions do you actually achieve in evoking. And I think the Star Wars trailer does a good job in evoking, but so does the Batman Superman trailer evokes good emotions as well.
All you had to do was put the goddamn Millennium Falcon up and you would have achieved your pathetic approach.
Well, right. I mean, they basically did it in the teaser when they put in the Millennium Falcon and then showed Chewie and Han and him saying, "We're home," and every fanboy fucking burst out into tears. Because this is the thing about the fanboy thing with Star Wars, right? Like, we've already had three new movies for the Star Wars fan base, and we were unbelievably let down by them.
Yeah.
Not just, like, they're inferior movies. Like, they are trash movies compared to the originals. And they didn't have the set of characters that we were used to seeing. They were all new characters. This movie brings us back into the universe we know and love. And it brings us back with Han and Leia and Chewie and Luke, et cetera, while also introducing new people. So that is the added emotional layer of all of this.
So let's talk story for a second. Because what I got out of it was the black guy is Luke Skywalker. The woman is Princess Leia, and then that other dude is Han Solo. And then, you know, somebody ended up being Darth Vader.
Poe Dameron?
Yeah, whatever his name is. Am I wrong in that assessment? Are they just recycling?
Kylo Ren is Darth Vader?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so they are recycling a little bit. I understand why they're doing this, because Star Wars has always thought of itself as a timeless epic. And basically in timeless epics, even if you go back to like Iliad and Odyssey, you have reoccurring themes that happen over generations, because part of it, part of the concept of an epic is that things happen in a cycle. But ideally, things happen better in subsequent cycles. You perfect the cycles. So in the first cycle of Anakin being the savior and growing up and actually being the corrupter of the Force, which leads to the original series where Luke is there and he ends up winning, but now we find out, like, in this series that, like, it, maybe he won, but it wasn't all as, it wasn't a complete and total victory. So you need another set of people to continue and perfect the victory.
It basically wasn't the final solution?
Not quite the words I would use, but yes.
So the idea is the black guy is going to be the ultimate hero, the ultimate Jedi.
Maybe. Yeah.
So is the second movie gonna end with his hand getting cut off?
Yeah, probably. There probably will be some appendage removed at some point. Yes. It is likely. But you also have to remember that some of the recycling is from the fact that these struggles in the Star Wars universe don't go away. The light side, the dark side, they're still there. The Sith, the Jedi. That is still a fight that continues, even if it has been dramatically reduced, because of the death of all the Jedi and killing off of most of the Sith. But I am a huge nerd on this. I could talk for hours.
Yeah, I'm hoping that what you're saying is true and Luke Skywalker isn't the new Vader, because that would literally be the same cycle.
Yes. Yes. I think that would be a very bad iteration of that cycle. It has to be something that progresses. He has to move on. And I think this is going to be the story of the spawning of the new age of the Jedi. I mean, even the name of it, The Force Awakens. Because basically, when at the end of Return of the Jedi, you have Luke, who knows the Force, about the Force. That's fucking it. Like, there are very few other people in the universe who know about the Force. Especially because they took all of the books and whatever and basically threw them out the window and said these are no longer part of the actual universe. So anyway,
so then where does the rest of the trilogy go if this one is just about here are more Jedi?
Well, it's about the spawning of it, right? It's about the beginning. Like, how would that start? How would you begin a movement like that, bringing back basically, I mean, they literally call it a religion in Star Wars, but if you think of it that way, like reviving a philosophy or a religion or a race of people, to use different metaphors.
You give them fruit baskets.
Luke and Leia are really the two that really have that force, or really have that, you know, that huge reservoir. Not reservoir, but they're very powerful channels of the force. And I think that the big struggle, as Daniel was saying, is how Luke, Over the subsequent 30 years or so since Return of the Jedi, or whatever time frame that you're going to go with, the struggle, of course, is how are you going to reshape and rework it and pass it down? It's the passing down of the legacy, I think, or the passing down of what you've learned from Yoda and Obi-Wan. Because even then, Luke really didn't get that much of an education on the subject of the Force.
Yeah.
To be truthful, because just the timing didn't permit it. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see what he's been able to pass down, and that might very well be, as Daniel said, might be the spawning as he referred to it.
And certainly, Luke not having this great education, you're going to spawn bad things as well. Just like Kylo Ren and these evil people with lightsabers.
Ah, so maybe Luke was training that guy and he became evil.
Yeah, there you go.
And then the black guy hears the calling, and that's how he fights the white guy.
That's racist.
My favorite thing so far is that there was a meme of the top picture of Luke, or no, of Leia and Han, the older ones you see in the trailer. And it's Leia saying, remember that time you were frozen in carbonite and asked Lando Calrissian to take care of me? And then it just cuts to a picture of the new black kid. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I keep saying he's black on purpose because of the troll movement that emerged when this trailer came out. Where people were saying the new Star Wars needed to be boycotted because it was anti-white.
Yes.
And this was hilarious because they fooled everyone.
Yes. This was actually a troll against social justice idiots, but social justice idiots thought it was serious and it became big news. This is so similar to the pee your pants for feminism thing that I can't stand it.
Bleeding? Remember the free bleeding? Well, no, I don't want to remember that, but it's just another example.
Yes. It was a massive troll that fooled huge major media outlets.
Right. Apparently it became one of these hashtags that people create sometimes where a couple people say something offensive and then the hashtag starts trending. And then it's just a bunch of people making fun of the hashtag or complaining about the hashtag and being offended about it.
It's hijacking a hashtag.
Yes. We were actually on the metro the other day and this group of kids, one of whom was black, was sitting across from Faiz and I, and they were actually talking about, can you believe this boycotting the Star Wars thing? Like, how fucking racist do you have to be? And then I had to politely explain to them that it was a giant joke that the media took seriously. And they're like, I don't know, man. People are pretty racist.
But that's like, the thing, is this is what I get so annoyed about and frustrated with social media and the internet in general is, aren't we letting the internet influence real life too much rather than just letting it be a tool to help you improve real life?
Certainly. I think that's a rhetorical question because the answer is fucking yes.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me that much.
I'm telling you guys, I'm going to make my pitch for Person of Interest because they deal exactly with that theme. I'm telling you. Anyway.
Yeah, but it's so boring.
No, I'm telling you it's not. You got to give it another chance.
It's a procedure.
Oh, it's like Wuthering Heights. You'll like it once you get into it.
You got me to watch The Flash. Calm down. So let's move on to more things on the internet. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, got Race for my firewall. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. When you check your privilege, what do you consider your privileges?
I checked my privilege recently, and it turns out I'm good. So, I'm done. Checking my privilege.
I checked my privilege, but when I brought my ticket back to get it back at the end of the night, they didn't give it to me.
I checked my privilege, and it turns out I was a quart low.
I checked my privilege, and I got a 5-minute penalty.
I checked my privilege, but they said if I wanted to check a second one, that it would be $50.
That was the same joke I said. You just changed it.
Yep.
I win.
I'm out. I'm not good at this. I need writers. I'm not an improv artist.
They actually do a version of this on Undateable because Undateable is live now. And when they fight each other, their fights are just throwing insults back and forth at each other. And it's because it's live. They're just coming up with it off the top of their head. It's really funny. It's a great use of live television.
I thought about watching that, except that I haven't watched any of the other Undateable, so I didn't want to, like, I need to watch the first season or something.
No, you don't need to. They're short seasons anyway, they're like 10-episode seasons, but basically the premise is one guy owns a bar, and he's like the stereotypical nice guy, and he lives with a guy played by Chris D'Elia, who's like the stereotypical ladies man, and they fight over the nice guy's personal life.
Ah. Uh-huh.
That's the premise.
I see. I checked my privilege, but then it moved out of my line of attack, and so then I had to recheck it.
What?
Until it was checkmated.
Oh, I see what you're doing. That was a good try. It was a good try. I appreciate your use of the different word, different use of the word check. It was the delivery left something to be desired, though.
I'm not a comic writer. I'm at best a comic enthusiast.
All right, so are you just avoiding checking your premise or checking your privileges right now?
I find the concept of checking your privilege so stupid and offensive that I literally give it no thought in my life that I have actually had any quote-unquote privilege.
That's exactly my attitude about it.
It is a concept meant to destroy actual achievement, goodness, virtue, and everything that has to do with a moral human being. It is basically the concept that because you have achieved anything, you do not deserve it. And that to me is so utterly contemptible that I have never even considered if I had privilege in any regard.
That's similar to the first answer on Reddit where they're like, no, I don't check my privilege at all. I just don't think about it.
That's how I feel.
My thing about this is I should have a lot of privilege, right? Because I'm a white male.
It's true.
How poorly would I be doing in life if I wasn't a white male, if I'm here because of privilege?
If this is where privilege got me. Yes, if you were black, man, you'd be sucking cock in the street for some crack.
Yeah, I mean, I'm half joking here because I have a comfortable lifestyle. I'm not saying I have an awful life, but I'm by no means anywhere close to the 1%. I'm by no means anywhere close to, you know, financially stable in the long run and financially independent. I'm not a homeowner. I'm a renter. You know, I don't own my car. I make car payments every month. And now they're saying, oh, that's such a white privilege thing, right? Anyone listening to this, right?
Well, this is my privilege.
You have time to host a podcast. That's pretty privilege.
Because there totally aren't black podcasts.
Are there, actually? I don't know.
I think iTunes just filters them out automatically. You know, they just put that little red E on them, and then they just suddenly disappear. They just fade away. Gone. I don't understand this at all. I think people should not check their privilege. I don't think you should care about your privilege. I think you should tell privilege to go, or anyone who says to check your privilege to go fuck off. That's the totality of the thought I give in privilege, which is I actually. That answer I sort of gave in stupid jest at the beginning here, I check my privilege, I'm fine. That actually came up in a conversation about, I was talking with another white guy about it, and he said, well, what if we checked and found out we were not privileged? It's like, what if we genuinely looked into it and we're like, oh, we were pretty actually oppressed in our lives. Like, that so that's joke. My response now is, I checked, I'm fine.
That was similar to the joke I was saying.
Yeah.
You ready to move on to the next Reddit?
Yeah, because fuck checking your privilege.
We'll move on to the next Reddit, but you all can check our privilege. Leave us comments on Facebook and tweet at me, and maybe leave an Amazon review, an iTunes review. If you want to create an Amazon page and leave a review too, sure, go ahead. Leave an iTunes review checking our privilege.
I checked my privilege, but then Nike sued me for trademark infringement.
Ah, that's a good one. Well done. That's a good way to end. Next Reddit. What is your favorite thing to ever come out of the Star Wars universe other than the lightsaber?
Oh, that was everyone's answer.
Was it?
I want Elliot to go first.
Has anything come out of the Star Wars universe? Like, do they mean like something that's actually transpired in reality?
No, I don't mean someone being gay. It's not like they're like, which is the gayest character coming out?
Oh, well, Hayden Christensen, obviously.
Because that's a tie between C-3PO and Jar Jar Binks. But.
Goodness. I refer to my new car as the Millennium Falcon. So, I mean, I definitely, that's one of my favorite things about the original trilogy. You know, just the relationship that Han Solo has with his vehicle. Because I certainly have that relationship with mine. So. I don't understand the question fully.
Basically, just what is your favorite thing about Star Wars other than lightsabers? Is if the question was worded a little differently. I think that's what it would be. And so my answer is, you know, aside from the lightsabers, the whole Sith Jedi dichotomy and the complexity of the history of it and the philosophy of it is wholly fascinating to me. I've read literally dozens, if not in the 50s of books about the Star Wars universe. And I am completely fascinated with that. Justin, anything? Do you like anything about the Star Wars universe?
Jar Jar Binks?
No, you're dumb. That's a troll right there.
It does amuse me how angry people get about Jar Jar Binks, though. Come on, that's amusing.
Most racist character ever in anything.
Yeah, the Gungans are pretty racist in general.
Yes.
No, I enjoy all the references that have come out of it. Like, Star Wars is a very easy to reference movie. Even if you don't love it, it's hard not to reference it.
It's true. If I had to guess your answer, it would have been something like the ability to use Star Wars in pop culture talk, like discourse.
But isn't that kind of the mark of an icon, of something iconic in a culture? Where even if you don't watch it, even if you've never seen it, you still, through osmosis, will know some of its more famous lines or famous imagery. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but it has to have the ability to have that in order to become that icon. And I think that's what there is to appreciate about Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, also, J.J. Abrams, Lost. I mean, there's just a number of things that have it's influenced, I don't think you can deny. There's a whole generation of people now. I mean, Zack Snyder, right? When we learned about him, we learned that Star Wars inspired him. And apparently he pitched a Star Wars movie at one point. So I think the way it inspired the creativity of a generation of artistic and creative people, I think you have to appreciate that as well.
Yeah, no, certainly Star Wars, not that the end result of this was something, but Star Wars is what inspired me to start writing music when I was younger. And I actually got several pieces published because I was so inspired by the score of John Williams that I wanted to create something as epic in the world. Very motivating in that way.
All right. Last Reddit. What's something you've always known and thought everyone else knew, but you found out almost no one else knows? Now, before I continue, I want to, before you guys answer, I found it interesting that most of the Reddit answers, if not all, were all practical answers. So one of them was like, the gas gauge tells you what side of the car the gas tank is on by an arrow. Which is a very random thing to expect that you thought everyone knew.
Yes. That is pretty random.
So it was interesting to me that everyone answered this question with practical things.
Yeah. I think I had a couple different answers that leaned from not practical per se, but practical-ish to much more abstract. I'm going to go with the abstract one, which is there was never a time in my entire life where I did not think ideas were profoundly important. Now, there were times in my life where I was a relativist, and I thought the important things about ideas was simply getting people to believe the ideas that you wanted them to believe. But I never, ever thought that ideas were not important. I didn't directly translate that into philosophy until I was in college and even in grad school. But always, always, I knew that ideas were what moved the world in every case. And then actually meeting people who not only didn't know that, but who were antithetical to that, was just mind-blowing to me for a while. Because I thought that was just, everyone took that for granted. But they don't even know it. So, there you go. Elliot?
I think, well, mine's probably a little bit more practical, I suppose.
How dare you?
Just a little bit. Well, you know, when you work at Disney, you know, especially if you go to a park like the Magic Kingdom, it's so legendary and it's so etched into the fabric of Americana, you know, that it's really surprising when people ask you, what's the Haunted Mansion? Or what's Pirates of the Caribbean? I've actually been asked before, who's Mickey Mouse? I mean, and I'm not talking about foreign visitors. I'm talking about American citizens. Well, maybe they were Canadian, but still, I mean, it was just, it boggles my mind. People, they spend all this money to come to Disney World, and then they have no clue who Walt Disney is.
In Canada, it's Maurice the Moose.
What? What'd you say?
I said in Canada, it's Maurice the Moose.
Maurice the Moose, yeah, Bali.
Also, a Canadian would never stop to bother you with a question. They would just look it up themselves.
It's just one of those things, you know, like you're always, I'm always shocked, especially when it comes to like Uncle Walt, as I refer to Walt Disney. The idea that people don't know who he is and they'll come to Walt Disney World without knowing who Walt Disney is. I think that it just drives me up the wall. It really does.
Yeah. Justin?
I have never realized, or I never realized for a long time, that people didn't know they don't have to do shit and they don't have to buy shit. Like, we see this so often where people get mad that, oh, someone's selling this and it shouldn't be sold, or the way they make that product is awful, or, man, everyone does all these awful things. Yeah, okay, just don't do them. Like, okay. I mean, I guess that's part of the reason, like, I've never drank and I've never done a lot of things a lot of people my age did while I was growing up, because I was just like, I don't have to do this shit if I don't want to do it. If you guys want to do it, you can do it. But I think a lot of people just assume, well, if that's what everybody else does my age or what everyone else in the culture does, that's sort of what I do. I don't have a choice not to do it. You know, Rice Krispies, I have to buy them because that's what exists. I can't just say I'm not going to eat cereal.
I think that's actually a corollary of one of the ones I thought of, which is more in today's context, which is that people don't know that economic force is not the same as physical force.
Yeah, that's really abstract.
Yeah, that's why I went with the slightly less abstract one. But
yeah, that's you're right. You're saying it the more philosophical way than what I'm saying.
I'm just saying it's a corollary of what you're saying is all. Yeah.
Right, because I'm talking about economic force and social force.
Yeah.
Where people see those as legitimate things when they're not.
Right.
Or, I mean, as another, I guess as another corollary, the idea that people aren't necessarily the way you think they are. You know, when people argue against capitalism, they talk about, but people are greedy and they're this and they're that, they're horrible, they're not gonna take care of the poor and this and that. I mean, and leaving aside whether anybody has any obligation to take care of the poor, which we don't, but the idea that human beings would not, you know, would not start things like mutual aid societies like we used to have, or that, you know, people, if they were not having so much of their money taken from them by theft, that they could donate more to charities and to churches and other organizations. I mean, I just don't understand the idea that people would not be generous or would not be benevolent if they were left free to do so. Yeah, so I think that that's something a lot of people, a knowledge that I've always had. I've always believed that human beings were capable of great things and that they didn't need to have their hand held. But apparently a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, and I guess it's sort of similar to that is, you know, what I learned recently. I said that, you know, earlier in the podcast about, you know, that woman responding to Jeremy Renner. It's the idea that I always thought it was like a given that other people existed. And you took them into consideration. You know, a lot of the rules we create and the philosophy we create in the society is people have this idea that you need to create rules to make people pay attention to other people, to make them think about other people. And I never realized, I guess, maybe until I moved out to California where this is the worst, that people just don't take other people into account. You know, I complain about driving all the time, but that's the number one thing with driving. Is that people just don't take other, like, they don't take other people into account. They don't think other people are on the road. I mean, I'm driving home today. There's a bus on my right-hand side. It stops. I'm in the right-hand lane. There's two lanes. Guy in the left-hand lane is riding on my back bumper the whole time. When the bus stops, what do you think he does?
Immediately goes around you.
Speeds up.
Yeah.
Because that's the logical thing to do, right? Oh, you know, I want to be in a car accident. Now, fortunately, there was enough space, and I was, you know, I'm at this point, I'm stubborn enough that I'm just going to keep fucking going. If you hit me, I'm going to call you out on it. But why would you be driving one consistent speed the whole time, and then I don't change my speed at all, but the bus stops, and then you speed up? I don't know. Yeah. To me, other people have always existed, and they're always something to take into consideration. And I don't think that that's true of me. I don't think that what I say about other people or what I say to them reflects me more than them. I mean, it reflects me in the sense it's what I believe and what I think, but I try to think about who my audience is when I'm talking to them and what I'm trying to say to them and what I'm trying to convince them of. I don't just say what I think regardless of who they are, and I just want to voice my opinion.
It's all in your head, Justin. No one else exists.
Okay.
You're just talking to yourself on this podcast.
Well, now we know what I learned this week. So what did you learn, Daniel?
Let's see. I learned that Jeremy Renner hates women and Jews. Oh, wait. I mean that Jews run Hollywood. I mean that they're all Republicans. Well, I learned one of those things.
It was very chewy. I learned that apparently baskets with like watermelon flavored stuff is racist, even if the people that receive the basket don't think that it's racist.
Our baskets are plural, are racist.
Grandma Nazi? Ah, trigger word. Justin, what'd you learn?
Besides the fact that I'm just talking to myself, I've learned that it's impossible not to be racist because everything is racist, basically. So, whatever. Fuck it.
Everything is racist. Everything is
racist. Racists, unite behind us and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Even non-racists, I guess, will accept, you know, sometimes. Tell us what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, regardless, 5 stars. Follow us at twitter.com/themidside. Get all the latest tweets from Justin. And facebook.com/themidside as well. And then, of course, we have patreon.com. We love our Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much. You help us actually make this podcast function on a weekly basis. If you go to Patreon, you can choose to donate some amount of money per episode that we generate. And it can be as little as a quarter, 10 cents, 5 cents, or, you know, $1.50, $2, $3.75. Let's go crazy. $5 per episode.
This sounds like the amount of money I could possibly win on DraftKings.
Yes, in fact. You'd have better luck convincing people to support us on Patreon than you'd actually win money on DraftKings. But
that's true.
In the long run. So, yes, thank you very much.
Even in the short run.
Even in the short run. Can't say short run. That's a microaggression.
I'm short, so it's okay.
Oh, okay, good. You're appropriating the word.
I'm taking it back.
Taking it back. Take back the night. And most importantly, if you could please...
I gotta go to the gym because I'm not 6 feet tall. How dare I not be 6 feet tall? That's how you get 6 feet tall. You go to the gym.
We'll post that picture on facebook.com/themidside, I mean. But most importantly, if you're listening right now and you actually enjoy the show, first of all, thanks. But also, tell a friend. Tell a friend. Give them a podcast for Christmas. Pick a box. Put a piece of paper in it that says themidside.com. Wrap it up. Give it to him. Best fucking present ever.
That's what I'm giving you for Christmas.
You know about the podcast. Wait a minute.
Just giving you pod for Christmas. There you go.
Oh, God. That's a little intimate for me.
Yeah, you didn't have to make it all gay, Elliot.
Yeah,
thank you, and we'll see you next week.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember... if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
But then you didn't even set up the transition with the Avengers.
So we don't talk about the... Oh, we do Captain America, but... The point was, cause.
And Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, I know, but the joke is, the reason I did that right away is cause the joke is I already hung a lantern on the fact that I wasn't really gonna transition. Do you get what I'm saying?
Hilarious.
Hilarious.